nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
Okay, so let me introduce myself. My name is Dmitry Zimdanov. I'm a surface science application scientist at Berk Nanotechnology Center. So thank you for coming to the seminar. And what I would like to discuss, a surface characterization of carbon materials, and I will focus on HOPG, highly orientated pyrolytic graphite, single wall carbon nanotube, graphene, and hybrid of single wall carbon nanotube with DNA, single strand DNA. So if you have any question, you can stop me anytime and ask questions, so we can discuss. So mainly in the audience, I can see a question of this presentation. So this is people which I would like to acknowledge as a co-author of this presentation because they contribute their data, their knowledge, their discussion to data which I'm going to represent. And so what my goal today, I want to demonstrate advantage and disadvantage of XPS technique in the characterization of carbon materials. And outline of the talk, I want to tell a few words about physics behind X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy. Also, when I would like to show a few examples about graphene layers on a silicon carbide surface. Then I would like to discuss an example of single strand DNA covalently linked to HOPG and DNA. And then I would like to discuss a new material which we probably observe on a highly orientated pyrolytic graphite upon a treatment in a cold AC plasma. Okay. So as I told you, it's not solely my contribution. So I'm glad to work with a group of Ron Reifenberger. It's from a physics department. Also, we work together with the group Michael Capana from electrical engineering department. I'm very glad to work with Vlad Rachov, who is Raman. In general, it's a laser spectroscopy specialist at Berk, and he also associated with electrical engineering department. And of course, I want to acknowledge the contribution of Professor Bergstrom and Bridget. It's from Department of Medical Chemistry. Okay. So the first thing I want to demonstrate is some advantage and disadvantage of XPS technique. I want to talk about technical detail and some theoretical aspects of X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy. So it's a boring part, so you can prepare it for sleeping. So put your body in a comfortable position, close your eyes. And why I'm going to talk about was because we have an excellent facility at Berk, and I would like that people use this facility and also people understand what kind of information can be obtained using this this instrument, and this is also one of my goals. So basically, many people know that XPS it's a surface sensitive technique which is providing information about the element composition of the sample within a let's say, first 100 angstrom. And also quantitative information about element composition can be obtained with XPS, and data can be also qualified, so you can make a conclusion about chemical state of an element and hybridization. Well, so how basically this data can be obtained by XPS. So XPS use a photo emission process, which is actually using a photon to remove a photoelectron. So this is a basic of X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy. So this is a photo emission effect. And since we use an electron, which is emitted by a solid, so an elastic mean free path of the electron will depend on the kinetic energy of the electron. So, and as you can see here, depending on the kinetic energy of the electron, the mean free path can be around, let's say, around 10-15 angstrom. So the information depth, which is equal typically about a three, an elastic mean free path, will be about a 50 angstrom. This is why this is surface sensitive technique. So because we use electrons as a probe. And again, another thing, this is the technique can provide you data about element composition. So how we can understand this? So if we talk about the simplest interpretation of a photoemission effect in its one electron model, so when its atom absorb a photon, so if its energy of this photon is enough to remove an electron, we have a photoemission effect. And binding energy of this electron will be equal photon energy minus kinetic energy minus work function of a spectrometer. So, but basically here this parameter we measure in the experiment, this is a constant, and this is a constant which we know pretty much, and so we can measure binding energy. And one thing with that every element has unique pattern of electron levels, so we'll have a unique set of binding energies. So, and we can identify element composition. Also, the intensity of photoemission peak, which we measure in the experiment, will be proportional to the concentration of the element, and also will be proportional to relative sensitivity factor. So we can calculate atomic concentration of the element. So this people pretty much knows. Also, another thing which people use a lot about XPS, it's a chemical shift effect. So again, if you are talking about one electron approximation, when the binding energy approximately equal to the energy of electron level, we can say that the change of the chemical state of the element will lead to the variation of electron level energy. So what, for example, if atom donate electron density and became slightly positively charged, it will be equivalent to the lower of a binding energy, because what happens, so it's, when you extract some electron density from an atom, so remaining electrons will see the nuclear less shielded by another electrons, so that the binding energy of this electron with a nuclear will increase, so the binding energy increasing. So vice versa, if electron accepts some electron density, so electrons of the atom will see effective charge of a nuclear decrease and due to shielding effect, and the binding energy will decrease. Okay, so this is one sense. So, but what's the advantage of this? So, as soon as a chemical bond between two atoms occurs, it's electron density transfer happened. So, and in this case, in this case, we can make a measure this tiny shift. We can identify the chemical state of the element. Okay. Okay. So one of the example. So using so people like to make example with oxide when you can separate metal and oxide. State of the element, but since we're talking about carbon materials, I want to demonstrate an example of a peptide molecules where you can distinguish a peptide structure depending on what kind, what type of a bond in this structure are. So you can see that the carbon bind to the carbon. It's a different binding energy compared with the carbon bind to the oxygen and nitrogen. And also when it's a carbon in a amide group, it's also shifted towards a higher binding energy. So all this shift, it's governed what we just discussed. So that's compared with this carbon, which can be considered neutral, this carbon has a higher positive charge. Higher positive charge, and highest positive charge when it's a carbon bind to fluorine atoms. So this is example of a chemical shift, which is also people use quite a lot. So this is what data we can get with the XPS. But what I would like to focus on a few boring slide below with a few equations. Which probably not necessary to understand, but I would like to demonstrate just for a future reference. I want to talk about quantitative analysis because, okay, in general, from my experience, people knows that knows that XPS is surface sensitive technique. That's okay. When they know that it's a quantitative analysis can be obtained, it's element composition of a sample. So some people know this. And surprisingly, usual another group of people know that XPS can deliver it. It's a qualitative analysis. So it's overlapping between these two groups of people is very seldom. So and I want to demonstrate when we do analysis, we have to keep in mind all of those factors. So, and especially I want to focus on a dedicated quantitative analysis. And so, in this case, we have to think a little bit about what contribute to intensity of photo emission line. So, intensity of photo emission line from a unit of volume will be proportional to the X-ray intensity. Of course, it will be dependent on the acceptance solid angle, which is dependent on our technique, and instrument detection efficiency. So it's our detectors here, which is not drawing, in fact. Then, of course, it will be dependent on the number of atom which emitted. So number of emitter is important. And this is what we're talking about, element composition. Of course, a cross-section, differential cross-section. The probability to get a photoelectron and probability and now we have to keep in mind that now as soon as photoelectron emitted it should travel through solid. You remember it's a universal curve when it's a mean free path depending on the kinetic energy, so this factor should appear here. Okay, so if you write it in a mathematic way, it looks like this. And right now, if we write it in a mathematical way, advantage is that uniform density sample, we can integrate with a equation and get intensity for semi-infinite specimen, which is described by this equation. And speaking by words, so for intensity of a peak will be proportional to the spectrometer parameter, element density, relative sensitivity factor, and elastic mean free path, and for the emission angle. And basically, so from here, this is a measured an experiment, this is a constant, measured, and it can be considered as a constant. So we can measure element density. Okay, but it's not the most interesting things, but the most interesting things when you start to measure a thin film, because we are in a Berg Nanotechnology Center, everyone concerned about nano now, and XPS is a technique which can work within, as I demonstrate, 150 angstrom. So this is a real nano technique. So, and let's suppose that we have a film with thickness T. So we can describe intensity from this film by this equation. So we basically, again, in this equation, this is measured in an experiment. This is a constant. If you know what the element composition, this is became also known parameter. And as a result, you can measure thickness of this film. So with XPS, you can measure thickness of a thin film using intensity of photo emission line. And in the ideal case, if you can grow infinite film, so the ratio between infinite film and thin film intensity will give you thickness right away. But you should realize that this is, in fact, it's two experiments. So two experiments very often associated with some extra experimental error. So it's very often we would like to get everything in one shot, in one experiment. So, but for example, if you have in this case, you can use this expression, which in fact concern about intensity of thin film and intensity of a substrate. And from this, you can, again, all this parameter are known. And from here, you can calculate the thickness of a thin film. Okay? And another last things which I want to mention, you can calculate the coverage, coverage of absorbed species. Okay, so using this expression, again, coverage will be proportional to ratio of absorbed layers and intensity of a substrate. And these parameters are typically known. Okay, so this is a question which I'm going to use in the future. Okay, so I want to demonstrate how we can calculate thickness of a thin film or absorbed layers if you talk about, for example, self-assembled monolayers, or also how to calculate the coverage of absorbed species. So, do you have a question at this point? Okay, so technical details are over, so we can talk about a little bit about the examples. So the first example, it's a few layers of graphene grown on silicon carbide surface. So with people who contribute to this part of the talk. And what I want to demonstrate here, I want to demonstrate how a chemical shift can help to identify the thin film on top of a substrate, and also how to calculate the thickness of a thin film. Well, so it's basically I omit some introduction why it's a graphene is important, but you know it's a graphene. It's open a new horizon for electronics, and people have a certain hope on this element, but the biggest problem to grow uniform graphene layers, because it's one or two layers of a graphene has a unique property, but as soon as it start to grow thicker, it start to resemble a property of a bulk graphene. And it's lose all unique electronic property. So, and here we try to characterize graphene layers or thermo-grown by thermo evaporation from silicon carbide surface. In this particular case, we use a C-phase surface. And this is a temperature of a treatment. And as you can see, the silicon carbide peak or silicon carbide sample has a single peak, which is characterized a carbon bond to the silicon. So this is a silicon carbide carbon. So as temperature increase, the another peak start to grow here, which is basically graphene peak. So these two peaks is well distinguished by XPS, and why we make this conclusion. Okay, we use a chemical shift, as you remember. Now, for example, in a graphene, carbon bind only with the carbon. So we know it's, versus our, we can call it a neutral state. Okay, so there is no charge transfer because a carbon atom is supposed to be equivalent. And when it's carbon bond to the silicon, the charge transfer from a silicon to the carbon occur, and binding energy of carbon decrease. So this is we can assign to the silicon bind to the carbon.
Is that a regular structure? Is every carbon bond into four silicon, every silicon four carbons, and so on, and silicon carbide? Or is it random?
No, it's not. It's structure. It's a single crystal.
Is it that it's made of silicon and it's made of carbon?
Yes.
I'm asking about the arrangement of those atoms relative to each other.
So it's like a diamond structure.
Right.
So we have a certain position. So it's a.
That's why I was asking, is each carbon bond into four silicon?
Yes. 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 Yes.
Carbon.
Yes. 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 So this is single crystal and certain chemical bond. It's not a homogeneous, so heterogeneous. So it's each carbon bond to four silicon and vice versa. So and the structure it's like a diamond structure. So basically, one of the interesting observations also here, what you can see, that the intensity of silicon carbide peak decrease as we increase temperature of growth. So, and what it tell us? It tell us that the signal from a substrate decrease because the thickness of the layer is increased. So this is what we want to, in fact, what we want to measure. And so how we can do? You remember we have this equation, which is allow us to calculate the thickness of oxide, thin film layers, using a ratio between intensity of thin film versus substrate. So here, using curve fitting, we can calculate the area under this peak and the area under this peak. So we know this parameter. So if we're doing a simple math, we can get this expression. And equation has a one unknown T, and you can get a thickness of thin film right away. But typically, I prefer to do angle resolver experiment, and the reason to do this because anyway, even if I get this ratio, it will be associated with a certain error, because to get this ratio, I have to do curve fitting. So curve fitting already apply certain freedom. What's the type of line shape I choose, and how I make a fitting. So I already apply certain experimental error here. Also, XPS measurement, of course, this is an experimental technique. It's bring you a signal with certain noise. It's also associated with a certain error. So if you want to measure better, you need to average your data. And the best average in this case, if you measure a thin film at a thickness at a different angles. And then if you plot this logarithm versus 1 over cosine theta, which is a photo emission angle, you get a line which is a slope will be equal to thin film thickness or over attenuation length. Okay, in this particular case, we can see that the thickness of the graphene layers is equal 2.4 nanometers. So we basically make a measurement for a different growth temperature, and we calculate average graphene thickness, which is correspond to this number of layers of graphene on top of silicon carbide. Okay, so on one hand it looks good, but what people use in general to characterize the graphene, they use a Raman. So there is a highly cited paper by Ferrari, which show the dependence of shape of a Raman peak depending on the number of layers. So as you can see, the shape and the peak position, it's very sensitive to the number of graphene layers. So, and this is very remarkable, interesting study, because people prepared a sample, measure TM, identify the number of layers, and when they get a Raman using a different excitation wavelength. So it's if such established technique exists, we have to compare our XPS data with Raman, of course. So this is a Raman data, which we obtained from a sample which was annealed at 1475 centigrade. And the XPS give a thickness of five layers. But this is a two-spot analysis. So in the two different spot, as you can see, you can have five layers. See, this is the shape. Or one layer. So it's film is highly ununiform, but XPS give you an average thickness of us. So it's another example. If we look at sample annealed at 1550, XPS give a thickness 11 layers of a graphene, but as you can see, it's more likely as a five layers. But again, what we can see here is two layers. The Bose technique has advantage and disadvantage. So the advantage of the XPS that we measured fair average thickness of the layers, but disadvantage, we don't know a local thickness. So it's Raman is better to provide a local thickness, but Raman bring also a lot of question at this point, because if you look at sample which anneal at 1550 by IFM or STM, it became pretty smooth and more homogeneous, but still we can find some place where it's a Raman show only two layers. So it's a obvious disadvantage between the thermodynamics and the data which is observed by Raman. And how to explain this discrepancy? But basically, if you think about Raman, it's not exactly a qualitative technique. It's a resonance technique. So resonance techniques assume that if you have a certain kind of resonance, you'll have a huge enhancement of a signal. So because what even in this example, you can see it. I didn't demonstrate, but if you recorded it 2D line for a HOPG for graphite, so it will became very, very weak compared with one layer of a graphene because there is no resonance there. And the signal's noise ratio is not reflecting the intensity. So its intensity here, it was calibrated. You can see it's arbitrary units. And in fact, this signal, if you look from a spectrometer, much weaker than this one because of resonance nature of Raman. And so if you have some curved structure, structure like this, which is demonstrated by AFM. Of course, you might have some Raman resonance phenomena at this case, and a Raman signal will be greatly enhanced there, but it will not reflect a real concentration of two layers or five layers of graphene. So, in my opinion, both data should be compared, of course, and some structure-sensitive technique should be employed too. Okay, so the conclusion here. So I want to demonstrate how we can identify a few graphene layers on a silicon carbide. We saw how we can measure average thickness of graphene layers by XPS, and we saw what's some apparent contradiction between a Raman, but seems to me we can approach we can understand why it is, and my opinion is because it's a resonance nature of a Raman. So you have question at this point?
What's the difference between the lateral resolution of the Raman? Because you said that the spot size depends on getting the thickness. So what's the difference between the lateral resolution?
No. What I'm saying, my XPS, which I demonstrated, you also obtain it with the spot of analysis, let's say half millimeter diameter.
Right.
Okay, and Raman, it's a micron.
Okay.
I can show you this. I don't have a scale here. So this is basically about 20 microns. So this picture, this total picture, about 50 microns. Okay, so, but you see a spot of the Raman. It's a micron scale. This is a Raman laser. Okay, so Ron. You have some. Yeah. So for some reason I overlooked. It was a scale here. So the bar was like this, and it was a 20 microns. So we can conclude it's about a few micron size. We can check with Vlad exact number, but this is small. And basically, of course, you all hear about imaging XPS, and since we have a difference between silicon carbide peak and graphite or graphene peak, I tried to make an imaging, but the contrast was not enough for me to distinguish this. So basically, I have a resolution with imaging XPS about 5 micron. But the contrast was not enough to distinguish this heterogeneous distribution of a film. So, but it's also it's a point as that we have to compare macro and micro technique, in fact, because even with the IFM, so Ron, you can correct me, Sarah, also. So when we do STM IFM, in fact, what we find is place on a sample which is best for imaging. But sometime it's probably not a very representative, maybe. We don't know. We have our best hope, which is a very representative place. Of course, we change a spot and look where look the same. But I don't know, probably at a certain point how this spot compare with this one will look on AFM. Can we get the AFM somewhere here? Because even in Raman optics, this is optical image. We can see it's a kind of unhomogeneous surface. And can we do IFM STM here? Because it's not pretty much flat. So I don't know. Okay, so I want to move to a little bit another example about covalent bond between a single strand DNA and single walled carbon nanotube. And also this topic I want to discuss associating of DNA with highly orientated pyrolytic graphite. Which is considered to be a model system for a carbon nanotube. And this is a contributor to this project. Well, so what we again want to focus here from an XPS point of view, I want to demonstrate a chemical shift and element quantification. And basically, this is two things should come as a bundle. We are not separated. And everything should match. And everything should strike in one point. In this case, probably we can make some conclusion. Don can correct me, but probably this work was associated initialized by work of Zen, which is a P in 2003, and they demonstrate that the hybrid of single strain DNA and single wall nanotube can be created. And the advantage of that nanotube became soluble in the water. Okay, so, and it's many different applications, started from biomedical application, probably not ending electrical engineering application. So, and it's very, very interesting discovery, but what I show here, this is a DFT calculation, which is a P in this paper. And basically this calculation was not supported by experimental fact. So people believe that the DNA warp around a nanotube, and they not discuss any covalent cross-linking or how it's occur, how bond between DNA and a nanotube happen. So this was not discussed in the paper, and this is like Ron liked to say, this is a PowerPoint chemistry. So looks nice, but we don't know how it's related to the life, and we would like to study what's the mechanism of interaction DNA with a carbon nanotube. So And one of the ideas was that there is a covalent bond between a DNA and carbon nanotube. But the problem is that, of course, number of this bond will be limited compared with the number of carbon bond in a DNA. So we are talking about detecting a small signal on top of a big signal. So it's always very difficult to distinguish. So this mechanism was proposed by creating a hybrid between T30, which is a kind of a DNA, and a carbon nanotube. And basically, this is the mechanism. It involves sonication. So in during sonication, radical cation form on a surface, and basically interacting with the water OH group appear. So this is a OH group can interact with T30, and finally simplify some step can result to formation of hybrid. And this hybrid will be solved. Of course, in the future, the DNA can warp, but the first we have to create a OH group, and in very first, during the sonication, we have to form a radical cation on the surface. Well, so this was a hypothesis, and to prove this possibility, we have to consider it chemical state of a carbon nanotube and DNA hybrid. So, but again, as I told you, we try to detect a small signal on top of a big signal, so we have to try to find another signature which can help us to identify the chemical bond. Signature which can help us, shake-up satellite. And shake-up satellite, this is a typical phenomena for aromatic system. And here, again, show a little bit different example. This is an example of kappa and kappa oxide when a shake-up peak appear here, and if it's a peak shift between kappa photo emission peak is small, and sometimes in certain spectrometers highly distinguishable, but the appearance of a shake-up satellite allowed to distinguish chemical state. Okay, so and shake-up satellite it's associated with a second electron which involved in photo emission process. So photo emitted electron leaving an atom excite another atom from a binding state within a valence bands to antibinding state. So in the aromatic system, it's typically a binding from a pi state to a pi star state. Well, so in our particular case, this is a shake-up satellite, and we can see in a fresh carbon nanotube, it's a well-distinguished peak. But when we start to sonicate, we can see that carbon associated with oxygen peak start to increase after sonication, and this peak start to decrease. And intensity start to decrease? This mean that structure of aromatic structure of a nanotube start to degradate, and for this reason we don't have already pi star electron levels, so its a transition will be limited here, so intensity start to decrease. Okay, and another experiment which was suggested, it's interaction carbon nanotube with a radical scavenger, which is a Trollox molecule. So basically this Trollox molecule, it's organic molecules, which attack a radical. So, and as you can see, when we sonicate with the Trollox, the shake-up satellite greatly depressed. And this means it's Trollox actually interact with the carbon nanotube. But in general, if you know graphite chemistry, it's very difficult to attach something to the graphite, and if it's you are not functionalized. So, but sonication really functionalized surface of a carbon nanotube in this case. So we see that basically that OH group really can exist on the surface of carbon nanotube after sonication. So that's a mechanism which we see here. It's a really relevant mechanism. So that's since I mentioned about the Trollox, the mechanism of a Trollox interaction with the carbon nanotube is proposed here. The increasing of if you look back here, increasing of peak associated with carbon associated with the oxygen and carboxyl group is originated from Trollox, which attach to the surface, and also some OH group appear on the surface. Well, but anyway, so versus experiment prove a possibility, but we would like to have some more solid evidence that interaction between a carbon nanotube and DNA occur on a covalent level. So there is a covalent bond. So we can see that there is a possibility, but we cannot find a small signal on top of a big one. I did not show XPS spectra because it's pretty much difficult to distinguish between a DNA structure and DNA bind to the carbon nanotube, because again, it's a few bond linking DNA to carbon nanotube compared with hundreds bond in DNA itself. But one of the idea was we can use a highly orientated pyrolytic graphite as a model system. And the advantage of highly orientated pyrolytic graphite, it's a flat surface. And in this case, we can rule out warping of carbon nanotube, DNA around HOPG surface, because this is a flat surface. DNA cannot warp around the flat surface. So if it's a very covalent bond, we should see it on a HOPG surface. Of course, we have to keep in mind that the chemistry of a carbon nanotube and highly orientated pyrolytic graphite might be a little bit different, because it's in a carbon nanotube, CC bond, it's banded. So the reactivity may be a little bit different. Okay, so this is a C1s spectra for HOPG, and this is after HOPG sonication with two different DNA, so which one we call rocket DNA DNA, and another it's TG15. So again, the problem is when it's very difficult. You can see that some features of DNA appear. Of course, C1s peak is not alone to prove that DNA exists on the surface. DNA also bring nitrogen and phosphorus to the surface, which we can detect. But we would like to have some signature of DNA here. But even a sonicated HOPG, it's already has some OH group on the surface, which we expect, and a certain amount of a carboxyl group. So it's very difficult to do something here. But What we can do, we can quantify our data. So if you calculate the amount of carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, and phosphorus on your sample, we can calculate nitrogen phosphorus ratio and oxygen phosphorus ratio for our sample. So here is the data for HOPG syndicated with TG15, syndicated with NAVA DNA, and single wall nanotube, syndicated with TG15. So you expect to have a certain ratio between nitrogen and phosphorus. Ideal ratio for a TG15, it will be 3.5 and 7. For a nitrogen to phosphorus, oxygen to phosphorus, and 3.6 and 6.6 for another kind of a DNA. And if you look to this data for a carbon wall nanotube, it's measured by XPS. It's ideal it's very close to the ideal ratio. So amazingly close, I would say. So, but if you look at the data for highly irritated pyrolytic graphite, you can see this data quite a lot of expected value. So, the question why? So, the answer is that DNA is damaged due to this during this project. We have some association fragment of DNA with HOPG, but we don't have an intact molecule of DNA on the surface, and this is why we even try to make a STM experiment. I think to try to find a rocket DNA on the surface, but we could not, and the reason is because its DNA was damaged, and instead of distinguished structure, which look like a racket, we did not see this feature. Basically, it's also show us that it's a single-walled nanotube has a much higher reactivity towards radicals which form during the syndication. And in this case, our process governed by kinetics. So the radicals interact with CNT mainly, but not destructing of DNA. But when we have a HOPG in the same experimental setup, the concentration of a graphite atom much lower, and now radicals start to attack DNA, and this is why we have only a fragment of DNA on the surface. But anyway, this demonstrates that the DNA can attach to the surface without warping. So this is a proof of covalent bond between existence of a covalent bond between DNA and CNT. Okay, this is a conclusion. So, do you have some question at the point? Okay. So the last example, which I want to demonstrate, it's again, this is people who contribute to this project. We found one interesting state of the carbon after treatment of HOPG. AC plasma, and I want to demonstrate this. What I want to demonstrate is the chemical shift effect and it's a calculation of coverage of adsorbed species. One of the motivation for this work was that, in this paper, people claim a hydrogenation of graphene and formation of graphene. This is again a PowerPoint chemistry which was proposed here. Very some DFT calculation About the structure, of course, DFT calculation exists about everything, I think. People claim that they create the structure. But honestly, it's probably not a good manner to criticize somebody. But in this paper, there is no proof that the structure exists. So it's big question how we get away with publishing science. It's not my
thing. Is that something you can actually isolate?
Basically what we did, they take a scotch tape and peel off HOPG, and with a certain experience, peeling many times, you can make one layer. So these people characterize it by TM, and
how did they get the hydrogen water?
Yes, we treat it with a hydrogen plasma. We treat it with a hydrogen plasma for several hours. In my opinion, it's not in a well controlled condition. What we found, what we measure, we did a TM imaging. And they suspect, I would call, changes of the lattice parameter. But changing of the lattice parameter is within of error of measurement. Okay, it's a one sense. Another measurement which we did a Raman measurement which did not show basically anything supporting of this structure. And only interesting observation which was done, but it's a graphene change electric property. So graphene is a conductor, and this is an insulator. So we found that this conductivity change from a conductive sample to an insulating sample, and by heating we can convert it back. So this is what we see. So, but my point that versus structure should be easily approached by XPS, because chemical shift between these two states, it's not big, about 0.3, 0.4 electron volts, but if we're talking about graphene, peak, which I demonstrate, you have a full width at a half maximum, around half electron volt. So we should be able to distinguish a shift 0.3 electron volt without a big problem. So if we have a state. So we run this experiment. We treat HOPG in a hydrogen plasma, making a long story short, what it was found: if you treat in a hydrogen plasma, nothing happened. Chemical state does not change. So of course I use not we use not graphene, but we use the HOPG, and basically chemical property HOPG and graphene should be the same, because it's only a weak van der Waals interaction between layers and in HOPG. So it's chemistry shouldn't be different. But if you treat HOPG in hydrogen plasma, nothing change. In a chemical state, not changing, and no new element appear. Of course, XPS cannot detect the hydrogen, but so nothing appear on the surface. But if you add a little bit oxygen, and you can see a carbonyl species appear, and a new state of a carbon appear here. Why it's a new state of a carbon? So you remember this diagram which I show you already. So the carbonyl group, it's fall in this part. When it's a carbon transfer charge to the oxygen and binding energy increase. Okay, that's clear. This I can understand. But look, here, carbon shift towards a low binding energy. You remember carbide. So it's some element contribute to the carbon, this mean. So an increase of the binding energy. So, decrease of the binding energy. But XPS not detecting any element here, oxygen and carbon. So and basically, of course, some expert can correct me and say, "Oh, you're talking only about chemical state effect, which is initial state effect, but this can be final state effect," which I agree with them. But anyway, the new property of material appear, and basically, it's reproducible. I reproduce it many times, too many probably. Times in a different condition, and the critical here to have oxygen, and I can tell you even more. So when you treat HOPG in oxygen plasma, and then leave it in hydrogen, so this state gradually form. So it's after treatment in so basically oxygen radical it's a first attack HOPG. Create a certain active center on the surface, and after that, surface became somehow active to the hydrogen. So this is what, and the new state of carbon appearance.
So did you image those surfaces so you know whether you have defects in those surfaces?
I will tell because Sara is here and Sara did an excellent job. I have to show her contribution here. And basically, but also one of few things. We can calculate coverage of the state. And this is quite big. It's a quarter of monolayers. And carbonyl, it's about one monolayer. So we are talking not about a small amount. So it's quite a lot. So now Sara can correct me, or probably you can talk. So but basically we take the sample which treated in a mixture of hydrogen and oxygen plasma and get a TM of that. And Sara called it a popcorn structure, right, Sara? So a surface is not flat, and HOPG usually in this scale it's a flat, and you cannot see anything although you come across of a monoatomic step. But this is a surface like has a lot of particles, because the first time I look at this I say, oh, is it dust? But scale it's too small for the dust, and this dust has a regular structure. So when you come closer, you can see this dust has a height about 1.6 angstrom. So this is a line. Fortunately, I could not extract it from a PDF. So I cannot show a profile here. And when you come closer around this particles, it's a, we have to discuss it a little bit more, but you can see interference structure appear. But it's look like this is interference associated with this popcorn structure. So because it became less here. So the definitely electric property around this object is different. Well, if you focus on this area, you can get an almost atomic resolution here. Okay? And the latest parameter correspond to HOPG. Of course, the surface is defective. Okay, this is how surface look like after oxygen-hydrogen plasma. Annealing of this surface lead certain recovering of smoothness, but not completely. So I don't have I can show you.
So do you have controls that you can look at by SPS? And the controls I'm thinking of are compounds that would have a carbonyl that would be similar to what would be formed graphene and hydroxyl. So I would take like quinone and hydroquinone. So quinone is just a six-membered ring, mm-hmm. and two carbonyls on either end. Mm-hmm. And phenol, or hydroquinone would have two hydroxyls.
Oh, but I will know the structure. So it will look.
I'm just saying that you have a control where you actually could look at a model compound.
Oh, but carbon. Yeah, but
you can see whether that new state of carbon actually is a carbon that's on like a phenolic.
No. Answer is no, because the model compound which you refer to is well characterized in the literature. Okay. So nothing like this observed.
Are you sure hydroquinone is characterized?
No, I have to check, but it's a phenol and carbonyl species. It's
a particular type. It has to be a type
to
be in those molecules, so it has to be like a
quinol. Okay, it's a good suggestion. I can try. But the question is, can I absorb the species and can I keep them in the vacuum?
Exactly.
I can take a look if I cannot do it with this particular compound. I can take a look in the literature. So, some compound containing phenolurine, a number of phenolurine and carbonyl.
Particular type, it has to be the carbonyl exactly.
Yes.
Directly conjugated.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
What you have.
Yeah, but it's one interesting sense what also happened, which I mentioned here, but not clearly, probably. So if I treat HOPG in the oxygen plasma. So a carbonyl peak appear right away. Well, but this peak is not. And when it stay in hydrogen.
See, that's exactly what quinolones and hydroquinone do. They pop back and forth between the two oxidations.
Well, and then it's, so have to take a look. Okay, it's interesting. So I have to take a look. So I will discuss with you, if you don't mind, of course. And the interesting things when we start to heat with sample again to 50 centigrade, the ball state disappear, and became like a HOPG. And it seems to me this carbonyl state it's stabilized this one, so they should be present together. So, carbonyl can exist itself, but this state should be stabilized by carbonyl. So, of course, another critical experiment here. So, it's this state most likely associated with hydrogen. Okay? And this, of course, thermal desorption experiment can answer a certain question here. So, I have to think how to run this experiment too. Okay, so finally it's a conclusion. So I demonstrate a new state of a carbon. And this is a new data and we have to discuss and we have to probably make a new interpretation. So any comments are very welcome at this point. And finally, I want to acknowledge people who helped me to do this study. And so it's all my KSers. And the work was supported by Kirk Grant. And also I would like to thank all Berk administration staff and member for the support during my stay at Berk. And also director of the Berk team, Sands, which basically give us financial support. And I would like to thank you for your kind attention. And I'm glad to answer any question.